observe that the apologist that we have spoken, that the other members will get us on the way. Thank you very much. DT and your team, I'll be handing over to you. You are going to give us a third quarter report. In your third quarter report, there are some areas that one has to raise before you have to present. We are a bit concerned about regression in quarter three, in comparison to quarter two and quarter one, in the performance of program one. Program two has been achieving targets until quarter three, because they've achieved most of their targets, but in quarter three it really came down. Domestic tourism, I rest my case, but still, you've got to tell us what is going on. Program 3 is always disappointing, but be that as it may, as you take us through, do take cognizance of those issues. In fact, we also have observed the underperformance or under expenditure in TIP rather. There was some under expenditure. So if you can just take me through those, we would really appreciate it. And in your third quarter report, would also like to see how much have you done to begin to change the people's lives, because much as we say tourism is an economic sector that is capable of bringing jobs, inclusive economy, but how far are you in line with that, particularly in quarter three, which has really shown some regression. But on that point, over to you, DG, and your team. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and good morning. We have got a full team, and what we normally do, Honorable Chairperson, is that we bring, for purposes of annual reports, strategic plans, quarterly reports, we bring the entire team so that you can get the details of what are all these issues that need to be explained. Otherwise, you would have just myself, maybe with the CFO, and we will speak about things that perhaps this latest update that is required, that they are always able to provide. Perhaps before I go into the substance introduction, I would like Honorable Chairperson to just bring to the attention of the Chairperson and the Honorable Members that we do have a new member of the top management team of the department on my left, Ms. Lula Maduma. She's what we used to call COO, which is basically the DDG responsible for corporate management. It's her first appearance before the committee today. Certainly not the last, but she will be doing her media and presentation today. Perhaps it is important, Honorable Chairperson, to start this presentation by indicating that we have had a very good year. That is 2016. We were able to go past the 10 million mark in terms of tourist arrivals, which was a great recovery. So that is something that we are happy about, and that is something that is really worth celebrating in terms of that level of achievement for the country. And it comes in different compositions. Overseas arrivals, which always is a very big question mark in terms of whether it is just the neighboring countries that are actually leading to the increase in the numbers. Overseas arrivals were 18% up. So that we were happy about as well. We also had the continent's improvement was about 11%. I thought I should put that just as a context. We are seeing this as growth, continuous growth. Even on the domestic side, what we have noted is that whilst the trips are not necessarily increasing, the number of people traveling is increasing. The holiday trips, which is really where we are actively doing some work, is increasing. So that also, for us, we think is a good sign, but we need to get more people to do more trips. So even if we've got about 400,000 number of people, additional number of people that actually travel for domestic purposes, the fact of the matter is that they were not taking as many trips as we would like to see. So those are some of the issues that as we go into the future, then we have got to attend to. Coming back to the business at hand, we have just over 60% performance in terms of the things that we were able to achieve. And indeed, Chairperson, what we do, whilst we would have matters that we mark as fully achieved, which is the right way to do it, and things that we would say partially achieved, a lot of progress has been achieved, but we did not necessarily meet the target, and then we've got the red areas. From our side, what we try to do, Chairperson, we maintain that kind of rating as it assists for management information. So we are able to zoom straight into the issues that require the most urgent and significant attention, as opposed to things that perhaps what is left is for a document to be signed and so on and so forth. But where we really have real problems, where we still have to go deeper and do a lot more work. So that assists, that kind of rating assists in terms of that. The DDGs will take us through the quarterly report per individual program, but suffice to say, broadly speaking, there are areas where, Chairperson, you would find that we talk about implementation of a program. Now, behind that implementation, there's a full plan. And that plan would then tell us where are we at this point in time. It becomes a little bit challenging to have those levels of details in the actual APP, because we may end up with an APP that has got 500 targets or so, and it doesn't become user-friendly in terms of... So it does require that we find ways of briefing the committee on how... What are the details behind all these things that we would have put out? Again, one other thing perhaps which I must just highlight with regards to Program 1 is that from a budget point of view, there is containment with regards to personnel budgets, and this is across the system, so we were also affected by that. So there are posts that we had to reorganize and rationalize so that we could still be able to achieve the things that we had planned without necessarily filling posts that we may not have money for in the future. So that's where you would find some of the areas when you look at that, you would find that why are you not using this money? Yes, we're not using that money because we can use it now, but when we have to use it again in the future once the person is on board, we will actually not have it. So that is another aspect. We In terms of program two, they will give a detailed briefing in terms of what were the issues and so on. But most of that work they already had caught up in terms of the progress and so on. Program three, there will be very distinct changes that we had introduced, which amongst others relate to what I would say what is in the best interest of the country. Does the department get a green while the country is actually probably getting a yellow or closer to a red? So this would be, if we have an agreement, a subsequent agreement with Home Affairs to say, Russia we can waive, and you've got this accredited travel company scheme that we're supposed to put in place. Waiving is the best price for us. So it takes away the need for us to then follow up on those particular activities. So those are some of the things that we'll have to go back and say, circumstantially, it does necessitate then that we should change the extra targeting and so on. Overall, Honorable Chairperson, what we do when we put together the plans and so on, our plans are always put together ambitiously, and which is deliberate. We try to stretch ourselves, and we keep talking about this when we're doing our planning sessions, that we are not looking for something that is going to turn green necessarily. We're not planning it to turn green. So in the end, we want to see the impact of this thing fully materializing, and we are able to actually then show that there is value for the money that we're actually spending. That's really the essence of this thing. But if we were to go, for instance, or Chairperson, to a point where we have everything that has been planned in terms of getting, it's something that would achieve 100% throughout the year, and achieve 100% ultimately at the end of the year, on both spend as well as the targets, would look so good as a department, but would not necessarily be a useful department in terms of changing the material conditions on the ground for the people that should be benefiting out of whatever it is we do. So that's why some of the things that we do, we go all out and say, this is what we're going to do. Sometimes we'll hit a snag. An EIA might trigger an appeal, and it has to go through the full process again and so on and so forth. But when we plan, we're not planning for that necessarily. We're saying we are going all out, let's see what then we'll get out of that, and then ultimately we'll be in a position to say these are the things. But I'm going to give to the TD Chief, and we'll do it sequentially per program in terms of the substance of the report.
Good morning to the members, thanks to DDT. I will speak to program one. I'm having a little bit of trouble seeing, so I'll just rely on my hard copy. Thanks again, members. I'll go through the presentation for Program 1. On the first indicator, it speaks to the number of strategic documents that were developed and implemented. The target there was to ensure that the second draft of the strategic plan and the APP for 2017-18 financial year is submitted to DPME and National Treasury, and those documents were indeed submitted. On the APP for 2016-17, we submitted that report, the performance report, to DPME and to Treasury. On the risk mitigation report, during the third quarter, we submitted the second quarter mitigation report for 2016-17 to the Risk Management Committee for adoption. And again, the report covers all the key risk indicators, the performance areas therefrom. And on the second indicator, it speaks to the number of public entity oversight reports that were prepared. The SAT quarterly oversight report was prepared. It deals with the alarm financial performance and compliance of SAT with the PFMA. It looks at various issues, including the number of international tourist arrivals, domestic holiday trips, business events, and other areas under the under SAT. The vacancy rate, our target is to ensure that it doesn't exceed 8%, and we're happy that we've maintained it at 6.8%. With regard to women representation at SMS level, the target there is to ensure that it doesn't fall below 50%, and we have indeed maintained it at 50%. As well as with people with disabilities, we've maintained their target at 4.4%, even though the government target is for it not to fall below 3%. With black representation, our target there is 91.5%, but in the department we've maintained it at 95.4%. With regard to indicator 5, that speaks to the development and percentage implementation of the workplace skills plan. The target for quarter 3 is 25% implementation of the WSP. However, this is an area where in quarter 3 we're not able to meet the target. We achieved it at 20%, and that's because of the fact that we did not hire new employees, appoint new employees in quarter 3. Therefore, the CIP, the compulsory induction program, we're not able then to send people to that program because we didn't have new hires. However, with the new appointees in this quarter, this week they have been going through the CIP. And with regard to performance indicator 6, which deals with the percentage compliance with prescripts on management of labor relations matters, there was 100% compliance in the management and the handling of those grievances, misconduct, disputes, and collective bargaining. We have the statistics there which indicate that during that period, we had 4 grievances, we had 4 misconducts, 1 conciliation matter, 1 arbitration matter, no appeals, and we have 1 matter that's been caught. On performance indicator 7, it deals with the implementation of the information communication technology strategic plan. Phase 2 of the plan was implemented in quarter 3. And it dealt with a number of initiatives, including the website analytics and reporting for the tourism website. It also includes enhancements on the KP, the design and development thereof. It deals also with the customization of the service for our BBBE. it also deals with the development of the portal for enterprise development. It also deals with the link created for our employee health and wellness program, the intranet access for employees, and also on the electronic document management system. It now enables the review of leave application forms. On the EPWP program, in phase two, it supports SRI in order for it to conduct analysis of business and system. And then the last one there is the development of the tourism spatial information system. The work is in progress there. We're just working on the requirements and the specifications there. On performance indicator 8, it deals with the number of quarterly and annual financial statements compiled and submitted. And in quarter 3, the first quarter interim financial statements are compiled and submitted to National Treasury. And in indicator 9, it speaks to the percentage implementation of the annual internal audit plan. The target there is 25% implementation of the plan, and that was achieved in quarter 3. On indicator 10, it deals with the department's involvement with foresight and cabinet coordination and support system, the implementation of those, and in quarter 3, we were able then to implement the protocol for cabinet and cluster coordination. On performance indicator 11, it deals with the implementation of our communication strategy. I want to just add that the activities associated with the strategy, which includes conducting media engagement, the branding, corporate branding, events management, internal and intergovernmental communication, including the community outreach through our Easing Visa, that work is happening. However, we wanted to indicate that while we're targeting 100% implementation, where we fell short was with regard to the corporate identity forum for third quarter, which was not held. However, that was corrected at the beginning of this year. The unit did organize the forum. However, the stakeholders, the relevant stakeholders, were not available, and that activity was then postponed to January. With regard to the number of tourism complaints in indicator 12 that were received, to appropriate entities for resolution, we're able to report 100% achievement there. And we have the statistics that 9 complaints were lodged, 4 of them were completed, 5 are in progress, and we have the breakdown there on the slide, which indicates that 9 of those complaints were domestic. There were none from international tourists, 4 completed, and the 5 that are in progress deal then with the matters around refund for travelers, refunds demanded from either hotels or from rental companies, car rental companies, and then 2, and then there were 2 robberies that were also reported. And then we further provide a breakdown of the provinces. 2 of the complaints originated in the Northwest, 2 in the Central, 2 in Arkham, 2 in the Western Cape, and 1 in Mpumalanga. With regard to indicator 13, which speaks to amendments to the Tourism Act, the drafting of those amendments, in quarter 3, the drafting of the Tourism Amendment Bill was done. And then in indicator 14, dealing with the number of tourism regulations that were developed, the regulations were published. Those regulations have been approved and in the process of being submitted for public comment. The just want to add there that in terms of our Act, the Tourism Act, the Minister is empowered to make regulations. The draft regulations themselves, as said, they're procedural in nature and do not necessarily speak to substantial matters that need the cluster processes. However, once the regulations are published, they'll be referred to clusters for their noting. And on Indicator 15, which deals with the percentage procurement from EEE compliant businesses in quarter three, as in the other quarters, there's 100% compliance there with regard to the procurement from EEE businesses.
I'm going to talk to the two tourist guide appeals. There were two appeals that were made to the National Registrar, and both these appeals were upheld. The first one relates to a guide who appealed the decision of the Provincial Registrar in terms of their re-registration as a guide, and the appeal was upheld because the Provincial Registrar's decision was based on the guide not being able to provide the proper CATSETA certification. The second one was related to a guide who complained about illegal guiding in the province. The provincial registrar actually did lodge the case with SAPS. Upon investigation, SAPS actually decided that they would no longer pursue the case because there was insufficient evidence in this regard. So that appeal was also upheld because in this instance, the provincial registrar acted in terms of what their mandate was, and the decision not to pursue the case was actually made by the authorized authority. In this case, that would be the SAPS. The National Tourism Information Gateways are operational, as we have said before, at the Kinshasa International Airport and at OR Tambo. And the progress on these are at various stages of implementation. So it's open to the public. I think on average we receive about 400 tourist queries per month at each of these centers. And the staff has been ably managing this work. Program 2, the National Tourism Stakeholders Forum, I won't talk to a lot because this process is on track. It's an annual target, but this year we have decided to hold more than one forum, given that there are a number of issues that we would like to discuss with our stakeholders. The National Tourism Information Management System, this year we wanted to actually publish regulations related to this. The draft regulations have actually been developed, and in developing them, we have consulted with a number of our stakeholders on the matter. The reason there is a delay on this is because we have had to think very carefully about what we are requiring businesses to actually give us as a minimum set of information, and to consider very carefully what gets put into the regulations. So I think that initially the team considered putting in place quite a complicated electronic system, a little bit if we were to compare, as someone described it, the eNATA system, which would gather information and would set up quite a complex web of of information on an IT-related system. But the reason that we haven't actually gazetted this is because we have been rethinking whether the focus should be on a complicated IT system or on actually the set of requirements. So it's the mechanisms, and we didn't want to publish regulations that would then compel people to follow a system that we are still thinking very carefully about. The BE work, I'm pleased to say, it's a little bit difficult to report for a quarter that ended in December when we're reporting now almost at the end of quarter four. But the Tourism Charter Council work is well on track. The Charter Council has met. It's a new council that was appointed in June, and they have in fact developed a transformation plan, which the minister is currently considering. I think we've reported in previous quarters that we had challenges around the baseline study for the amended codes, but I'm pleased to say that the baseline study is now well on track, and we will have the report by the end of the quarter, so the annual target will be met. In terms of the portal, the pledge functionality, so the portal really is about being able to match suppliers with people who are requiring the services. And the pledge functionality allows organizations to make a commitment around their own procurement from BE compliant service providers. We are very pleased to say that there have been 4 queries from major organizations since this functionality has been put in place, who have now committed a percentage of their procurement to come from suppliers who are listed on the actual portal itself. So this is achieving its function of actually matching suppliers with people who need the services. The tourist guiding sector, there are 3 programs, and I'm not going to talk to all of the detail of them. We are running programs that are capacitating current guides at World Heritage Sites. We are also running programs that are bringing in new entrants into the market, and then we are dealing with the area of continuous professional development. All of these processes, which I think in the previous quarters were a little bit behind, are well on track for delivery of annual targets. The next 3 targets actually relate to the work that we are doing in partnership with Sanparks on enhancing products at certain destinations. We have had some challenges with delivery of these particular projects in quarter 3. So on all of them, what was meant to have begun was construction at each of the sites. And I think that the DG alluded a little bit earlier to this. We have the choice at the beginning of the year when we work in partnership with other organizations of whether we put those targets into the APP because they have external dependencies which are not within our control. And I think that the choice that we made in this year was to actually put them onto the APPs because they are significant developments which actually take up a significant portion of our budget. So we wanted to reflect them within the APP. And we relied at the point of putting them into the APP on the information that had been provided by our partners in terms of where they were in terms of project readiness, but also in terms of their plans for development. The Shangoni Gate development is important for us because it actually is looking at improved access to the park from the northern side, which currently doesn't have that much access, and it's also linked to developments that will benefit the communities. Our EIAs on the Shangoni Gate are basically behind schedule, and although we now know that the basic assessment report has been finalized, there is still no record of decision from DIA on this matter, and this target, the annual target, will not be met. The work that we're doing here is really the entrance gates, looking at the reception area, public amenities, and also looking at facilities that enhance the visitor experience. The Palabora Wildlife Hub, similarly, although the basic assessment report has been finalized, we actually are not going to be able to meet this target completely. So there were two targets in this quarter. One was to actually finalize the appointment of the professional services team, and the second one was for construction to commence. The construction on the site will commence in quarter four, in fact has already commenced, but will not be completed, and the annual target, I think, will not be met on this one. The National Heritage Monument, I think, is also a project that is in partnership. The challenges related to this have really been related to new leadership within the project itself that have delayed their processes of finalization. Although the target talks about construction, at the National Heritage Monument, construction relates to two things. It relates to the actual physical statues being cast, and the second thing that it relates to is pathways as well as signage that is both directional as well as interpretation signage on the site. So the process of actually, some of the statues are already being nearing completion. Others are beginning the casting process. The signage is in fact being put up at the site as we speak, and the pathways where the statues have already been put in place are constructed. The pathways for those statues, of course, that will still be put in place this quarter will only be constructed once the statues are there. The product development master plan, I think, is well on track, and this is really about looking at our future work of how we match supply and demand and look at the gap of development of products that address the gap between supply and demand. Our TIP program, as we've said in the past, this is now its second full year of actually being run. The market access program, the grading program, and the energy efficiency program are on track in terms of their targets. The next set of things that we are dealing with, which will be a new program next year in TIP, but is currently in development, are the Universal Accessibility Incentive Guidelines. I think that in quarter three, we developed guidelines that were submitted for approval. There were a few things that we needed to tweak on them because this is a pilot program. And so the call for funding applications on our pilot for UA guidelines was not sent out in quarter three. I'm also happy to report that as I sit here today, that has already been addressed, so the corrective measure has been taken, and the annual target on this one will also be met and achieved. The State of Tourism report, I think in quarter one and quarter two, we reported challenges on this target. We knew in quarter one that the knock-on effect of not being able to meet the quarter one target would mean that there would be delays in quarter three. However, we have looked at the methodology and the approach to collecting our data, and we will meet the quarter four target. In fact, there is already a draft report that's presently being finalized, and that's the target for quarter four. The revised methodology and the reduced timelines does not in any way compromise the quality of the information. It also doesn't compromise the new methodology or the comparability with previous information. The mobile apps for the tourist guides and the VICs, I think we similarly reported that there were challenges in quarter one and two on delivery of these targets. I am very pleased to say that we have, in fact, made up those lost time in quarter one and quarter two. And in quarter three, in fact, on the 13th of December, we actually tested both of these apps. It's well in progress, and they will go live before the end of the financial year. So that is well on track. I've spoken to the Kinshasa and Ortier airports, and I won't speak to them anymore. And Anami, I'm happy to sit here and manage this if you want to stay there.
Thank you very much, Shamila. Chair, honourable members, I'm going to take you through program 3 with our first target speaking to cross-border guiding, a module that we are working on for cross-border guiding. And there were some challenges in quarter 3 in ensuring, especially from the South African side, that we get all the relevant stakeholders around the table. We managed to have detailed discussions with our pilot country, which is Namibia. We will be piloting this program with Namibia. So we had detailed discussions with our counterparts in Namibia, but unfortunately we could not in quarter 3, or we felt that the people that we could talk to were not sufficient from the South African side. But I'm happy to say that we have dealt with that consultations now. Consultations happened, and the module has been developed, so we are well on track to deliver the annual target. The next target speaks to the language training for Russian and Mandarin. Just to highlight, honourable members, that this current year's plan focused on two phases for Russian training. The preparation for the training was done in the previous financial year, and we plan to do preparation for training in Mandarin in the current financial year. But then there was an opportunity for us to fast track the training for Mandarin and move it forward with a year. And that the impact that that had was that we had to reshuffle our quarterly targets to make sure that we implement both training for Russian as well as for Mandarin in the current financial year. So in essence, it's two separate programs. Russian focused only on tourist guides, whereas Mandarin we focused on frontline staff and tourist guiding. Both of them have two phases. Phase 1 was training in South Africa. Phase 2 is for the Mandarin participants, because we got real good partnerships with accommodation establishments as well as China Air. We managed to send all 20 of the learners to China. They're in China at the moment, completing phase 2. And for the Russian tourist guides, we selected the top 2. They will be traveling to Russia tomorrow for phase 2. Which they will be completing before the end of the financial year. So in essence, we've moved the Mandarin training forward with a year, and that impacted on our quarterly targets, but we will be able to meet our annual targets in both. In terms of the 12 chef learners that we want to place in the Seychelles, we had some challenges in quarter 3 in finalizing the recruitment. But at the moment, recruitment was dealt with. The learners or the learner chefs are currently undergoing their medical checkups, and they will be placed as planned. The next target speaks to the next one we've achieved, and then the next one speaks to our market access program. The market access program focuses, honourable members, on putting in place a program to ensure that before establishments go to trade shows, they receive some kind of training. So there's a program before they go, and there's also some follow-ups when they come back. We did have some challenges in quarter 3 of making sure that this program is fully implemented as we planned, but subsequently we have partnered through South African Tourism with SATSA, and the program is being rolled out as we speak. So, Honourable Chair, that target we also well on track to achieve by the end of the financial year. In terms of the Draft Tourism Investment Master Plan, we did what we planned to do in quarter three. The next target speaks to the accreditation of travel companies. DG alluded to that in his opening remarks. You might recall, honourable members, that one of the recommendations of the IMC on the immigration regulations was that accredited tourism company program be rolled out in China, Russia and India, and that we further look into the possibility of rolling it out into Africa. And as DG mentioned, we did implement the program in China. In Russia, because of the visa waiver, that made the implementation of the program unnecessary. And in India at the moment, the priority is a bit different. So that's why we're not implementing the ATC program in India at the moment. We are looking at rolling it out in Africa. Also to note that the program works very well in a regulated environment, but when the environment is not regulated, it is fairly difficult to roll it out, but we are looking into that. And then our last target speaks to our annual ministerial session at the tourism in Indaba, and we are working on the next one for May this year, and we are well on track in hosting that event. Thank you very much. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'll be presenting on the domestic tourism management. Starting first with the domestic tourism growth strategy that we revised. In the first quarter, we're still busy with the revision of the strategy. But I need to indicate that has been finalized and we are ready to implement this going on into the next year. The second one is on facilitation of four social tourism initiatives that promote open access to selected government-owned attractions. For quarter three, the target was to activate the social tourism to target those identified people. And in quarter three, we're supposed to look into people with disabilities. This was done in the second quarter. Actually, it swapped with the elderly, which was supposed to be in the second quarter. I need to indicate that has been done. We are currently finalizing on some of the provinces that were a little bit behind, that is Western Cape and Eastern Cape. And this will be achieved, including the activation with the software, basically to make them aware of the information that we have come up with in our social directory. It also had another target that is basically to engage with the stakeholders to make them aware on the drive on the social tourism directory so that we have more of these attractions into the directory with discounted rates for our previously disadvantaged grouping. The third one is on the implementation of the enterprise development program, the annual target being 100 for the quarter three as well, making sure that we continue to support the 100 that TEP is to support with mentorship, market access, business development, and training. Out of the 100 that TEP supported, 75 said yes, they need to be supported going forward. Unfortunately, we couldn't appoint the service provider to deal with that on time, but I'm happy to report that now we have appointed the service provider for all the provinces. They will be able to give support to those who are in TEP as well as the new ones that are coming in. We also had a partnership to make sure that our enterprises are able to get training on events, how to do with events. 11 of them were given that partnership, and 50 were coming out of the incubator that we have already established. Hence, we have the 61 enterprises indicated there. On enterprise development as well, we have establishment of incubators. The target for the year is 2. We have already established 1. We will be establishing 1 in this fourth quarter. And all the processes are in place for that to happen. Each of these 2 incubators, we have identified 50 SMMEs. On capacity building programs, we have 8. And the first one being the CEF program, where we targeted 577. We have a variance there, but the variance is in terms of exceeding the 577. We were able to have 602 in December, 609 in November. Basically, we have exceeded this number in terms of recruitment, so that we are able to mitigate the dropout where they may happen. In this instance, they continue, hence we have exceeded that number. The second one is on the Somalia. We're supposed to monitor the training of 300 youth on the Somalia training. This was not yet started in the third quarter, but now in the fourth quarter, we have appointed the service provider and we are rolling out on this youth program. The fourth one is on the hospitality service training of 2,000 young people. We're supposed to monitor the training of these 2,000 learners in the hospitality service training. What we've come up with is that for all the provinces, the 2,000 was not met. We only managed to, at this point in time, where actually in January, we had already recruited 1,699. And going forward, we also had a challenge in terms of 2 provinces, that is Northwest and Limpopo. The service provider appointed then withdrew. So what we have done is to make sure that we come up with additional to be enrolled in place of those who have left the program, and at the same time to make sure that we meet the target of 2,000. We have already come up with the processes to recruit another service provider to deal with these 2 provinces, that is Northwest and Limpopo. We had another training program, that is the food safety. On this one, in the third quarter, we're supposed to monitor the training and the placement of the 500 learners. By then, it has not commenced. As we speak now, we have appointed the service provider. The business plan is in place, and the recruitment is underway. The target will be achieved by the end of the financial year. On local government capacity building, we are supposed to conduct and coordinate the needs assessment for the identified rural areas. The target was met. We have managed to do the needs assessment on the 6 municipalities, that is the Zadar Mtau, Mopani District, Zululand, Amatole, Owak Tambo, as well as Ngoma. That has been done. We have identified the needs. We have also conducted the workshop in the spring. On the review of the tourism human resource development strategy, the first quarter was supposed to have finalized the strategy. By then, because of the knocking effect of the quarter one, some of the time frames being moved, I need to indicate that we have managed to come up with the strategy, which needs to be approved, and this will be achieved at the end of the financial year. At the same time, we're supposed to have created awareness on the finalized strategy within the third quarter. Because of the moved time frame, this has not been done, but we're able to do validation workshops in all the provinces. And once it's approved, we'll be able to create that awareness in the following financial year. on the NCCE, that has been done. We have the report. In terms of capacity for 20 black women as an institution of higher learning, UNISA is assisting us on that. They were able to go through the first semester. They started on the second semester in February, and this is also proceeding well. On the number of programs to enhance tourism offerings, in this instance, it's on service excellence. We have identified three attractions, that is Manyani Game Reserve, Robben Island, as well as Kukuza National Park, in terms of supporting them to be able to improve their service level. With Robben Island already, that is done. Manyani will be launching what we call the Service Legacy Team this coming, the next week Saturday, and the Kukuza as well, we have managed to complete. So this is achieved, and it will be even achieved in terms of the annual target. In terms of facilitating the development of tourism interpretation signage as two iconic national heritage sites, we expected to support these sites with funding. But before we can release the funding, there are administrative processes that we need to meet in terms of the PFMA. And what was lagging behind was the issue of getting supporting letters from the managers of the site. In the third quarter, it was not yet done. But as we speak now, that has been done, and this target will be achieved. In terms of our blue flag, in the city, the project is in the implementation phase, covering 50 beaches with 200 learners that have been recruited. In the third quarter, we had 180 out of the 200 that you have already recruited, but currently we are trying to get the numbers to meet the 200. But the 50 beaches have been identified, and even these learners have gone through training so that they'll be able to provide the safety that we want to see in our beaches. On the draft on the infrastructure master plan, in the third quarter we expected to collect the data so that we're able to have an audit of the infrastructure throughout the country. We're able to do that, and with the report we're able to categorize in terms of the various types of infrastructure that we have, and as well as come up with the budget that will be needed in order to refurbish and maintain some of this identified infrastructure. The targets will be met. The last one is on the EPWP, the FTE job. The target for the third quarter was 872. We only managed to have 529, and the reason for variance is a question of right at the beginning we had to look into the asset register so that we're able to know what is it that we have and what is it that we need to be proceeding with. At the same time, we had to bring in DTEC to help us evaluate all the infrastructure projects that we have. The process to date is that we have finalized we have procured the services of DTEC, and then the evaluation of the tender in terms of who is going to assist the engineering company that is going to go through the process of assessment has been the tender has been evaluated, and we are hoping that once that is approved, they will be able to come into the department for a period of 18 months so that they help us to look into this SRI infrastructure-related project. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jen, members. On the budget, at the third quarter, we spent 1.4 billion of our 2 billion rand budget, which represents 70% of the total spending. On administration, we spend at 67%, policy and knowledge services 78%, international tourism 78%, and then domestic tourism 49%. If we go into the detail of expenditure on the next page, if you look at compensation of employees, you will see that the amount that we had left for the remaining 3 months is 69 million. Now, our compensation of employees is about 21.5 million per month. So we will definitely spend our total compensation budget. On the goods and services, you can see that we still have a variance of 175.7 million. The majority of that money is for the EPWP training, which is 110 million. And then we've also got our office accommodation, 6.5 million, our CETA and our auditor general accounts, which is about 15 million, and then our traveling and subsistence, which is in the region of about 3 million, that must all still come through in the final quarter. If you look at the departmental agencies and accounts, you will see that there was an amount remaining of 123.8 million. Now, the departmental agency and accounts, that is our contribution to SA Tourism, which is 1.024 million, billion. And then we've got our Tourism Careers Expo, which is 4.4 million, and our CAF CETA, 185,000 rand. The only outstanding amount that still needs to be transferred, it's a CAF CETA amount. The National Tourism Careers Expo was already actually paid in the previous quarter, but it was allocated against the wrong allocation code, but it has been corrected since. If you look at higher education institutions, there's still an amount of 4 million. Now, this is also transferred in the last quarter, so that will be zero. Foreign governments and international organizations, this is our membership fees to UNWTO and RETOSA. And because of the exchange rate, we had a small overspending of 47,000 rand, and we obtained National Treasury approval to shift funds so that we could deal with that over expenditure because it's a transfer payment. On public corporations and private enterprises, this amount is our tourism enterprise program, which is our market access, our tourism grading support, and our destination development, and it also included the tourism route. Of this remaining amount that was still there of 76.2 million, currently we are progressing very well, and the latest was that there's about just 23.6 million rand left from that specific item. On the non-profit institutions, now this amount is our SMME development. It was previously classified as a transfer payment, and we requested National Treasury approval to transfer it as goods and services, because we went through a tender process and it could no longer be a transfer payment, so we had to shift it to goods and services. So you will see that in the documentation provided that it was a environment. It's not in effect an environment, it's just a shift between two items because it's a reclassification. On households, this is our salaries that we pay for EPWP workers. There's always a link between your goods and services, your households, and your capital, because they are all three related to EPWP. So at the end of the year, we need to do a calculation to see what amount must be allocated to salaries for the workers, and that will be all for under households. So we will do shifts between households, water services, and buildings and other fixed structures, because that's all linked to the EPWP and part of classification according to National Treasury. If you look at buildings, that is also our EPWP and also our TIP, specifically our energy projects for TIP. So most of that money will also be spent. And then on machinery and equipment, that's our computer equipment, this was just the remaining part, the 3.2 million that will be spent in January, February, and March. And then the small amount for software, and also the payment of financial assets. That is usually our thefts and losses, and our damages, which we do not budget for, but we've got to write it off in a financial year, and at this stage it is 374,000. Our total remaining amount that we had was 602 million at the end of December. Thank you, members.
Honourable Chairperson, we will stop there. Maybe to recap, Program 1, we foresee two things that we will not complete by the end of the year.
Sorry, DG. I did not hear Lomzam.
I will speak about Lomzam just now. Sorry, Mr. President. Program 1, we will not achieve. We might not. In fact, let me put it this way. There's a target that we wanted to take a legislation through. And we've done the work, everything is ready. But the elements that we were dealing with was about the institutional arrangements around the grading council in particular. And there's a whole work that we're going to be doing in the coming year that relates to all sorts of other policy matters that require that we visit the legislation again. So we're asking ourselves a question that says, do we bring to Parliament a proposed legislation that is dealing with probably one pager, knowing that we are going to come back with a fully proposed legislation? So that's a context that we are somewhat saying we might have to just hold on to this one so that we'll bring everything all at once. So that is one thing that Program 1 would probably then be in the 90-something percent performance by. The second one, Program 2, the regulations for the National Tourism Information Management System, they're not going to be able to complete that with all the issues that the DDG was alluding to. One of the major factors that we are trying to manage is it should not be a burden to businesses. That's one. But the second thing is it should not create vulnerability for businesses from an information management point of view. So as opposed to these high-tech systems and so on, it must be about what information is required and for what purposes and what is it going to be used for without actually compromising commercial imperatives of the businesses. The second one that they will not be able to achieve is on the destination development. They will get the EIAs, and it's not. This is not a challenge from there. They are still within their time in terms of the time that we have actually submitted to them. So they will still get their EIAs, and their EIAs, once that has come through, then they will continue with the work. But of course, the manner in which it had actually been planned, it will not necessarily achieve. So they will not achieve two targets. Program 1 will not achieve one target. And then Program 3 might not achieve one target, which is the accredited the travel company mechanism as it pertains to some of the countries, because there's nothing we can do about those countries. And that's the only thing, in fact, in Program 3 that we foresee that by the end of the financial year we would not have been able to achieve. Program 4, the only thing that we foresee that we would not have been able to achieve by the end of the financial year is the full-time equivalent jobs overall. So it's from where we are now and where we were during third quarter, it's looking a lot more promising, I would say, in terms of us being able to still get above the 80% plus that we normally work on. Now, I would like to put this on record, Honorable Chairperson, that Nomsa Moisie, Ms. Bengo, I didn't talk about it when I was introducing the new DDG deliberately, but Nomzamo is the head of our strategy unit. She's the head of the performance unit, risk management, and all those things. So she will pretty much be visible in this particular space through and through. She's also the chief director responsible for oversight of SAT. So from time to time, she will also be visible when SAT comes. But I would like to place it on record that on behalf of the department, we are very grateful for the role that she has played over almost a year. And how long, Nomzo? A year and a month. So over that 18-month period, she held the fort. She was in that space when we got the clean audit and the awards and so on. So we are truly, truly grateful for that. Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you for the presentation. For me, Honorable Members, the presentation does not actually talk to what we see in the quarterly report. The presentation seems to have done better, and it seems like the targets will be met. What they're presenting to us now, that's what I see, but I'm opening up to you, Honorable Members, two questions. Honorable Kronborg, Honorable Adams, I'm not sure whether your hand is upmast or down. I see it's halfway. Honorable Khawula, then Honorable Foss. I would like to see it up.
Thanks, Chair. This is not always the easiest presentation for the department to do because, you know, the sexy one is from the entity, SA Tourism. And one kind of feels a bit sorry for the presenters because they've got to do this relatively dry stuff about programs that implement and to what extent it's been implemented. And I think everybody really wants to know where we're going with tourism. Are we ahead of schedule in terms of attracting people to our country? What is the spend? What are the jobs being created? And these are simply the enabling mechanisms that have been reported on. So it's not quite the meat of the subject. It's more sort of a compliance type of report. So having said that, it's not really that easy to ask questions. But I think there's a couple of things that I'd like to ask. The first one's on page 67. And that is to do with our capacity building program. And it speaks of young people where we know there's a very, very high unemployment rate being inducted into programs to give them an opportunity to step up and also to assist tourism. And hence the last column, quarterly three performance preliminary data, is quite worrying. The number of youth attend training and work placements differs monthly due to absenteeism or dropouts. I can't imagine a country where the extended definition of unemployment, which includes discouraged work seekers, sits at nearly 37%. And we know that the youth are anything up to almost double that. How anyone, given an opportunity like this, would drop out or become absent? I mean, they've been given an opportunity with taxpayers' money, and we are desperate for money. We've just had a budget indicating exactly that, and we put up tax rates again because we're short of money. So to me, that it beggars belief that that can happen. And it doesn't really say, this particular column, exactly what extent that is. So could we have some figures, maybe broken down, even if it's for the next meeting? And I know we always ask for things for the next meeting, and very seldom that we actually get what we ask for. That is a problem in this committee. But preferably now, what extent does this happen? Do we have some percentages broken down by province or per program? Because if that's what's happening, we need to be a little bit more careful about how we screen and vet people who are given these opportunities, because they're actually taking opportunities away from somebody else if they're not partaking in the program. Then the second question is on the complaints. Now, there's remarkably few complaints. And when one looks at the people missing their connecting flights at our Tambo because of the visa regulations, as my colleague has spoken extensively about, one finds it hard to believe that there's so few dissatisfied people. So, of course, any complaint statistic is based on who takes the trouble to complain. In this country, we don't even report petty crime anymore because we know the police aren't ever going to get to it. Now, I imagine there's a lot of people that would want to complain, but they think, what's the point? So, is there some kind of ongoing research that the department does which would look into something like customer satisfaction levels, so that even if people aren't complaining, we know whether people are happy or not? I would have thought there's some kind of benchmark for international tourists, especially, that you wouldn't want anything less than 95% of people to be happy. And certainly at airports, which we can control, you'd want that to be a good experience for everyone. It's the first impression you get in arriving in the country, and you never get a second chance to make the first good impression. So I don't really see that from the slides on complaints. I don't really get a feel for the overall picture. I just get a feel of the minimal number of complaints that were reported and dealt with. That doesn't speak to the hundreds of people that have had bad experiences because they don't complain. And then lastly, Chair, just on the signage. Because there's a slide now about signage and stuff going up at a new resort. And it's now been almost a decade I've been asking for signage to the Nelson Mandela capture site thing. The minister, in his response, or no, his budget speech to Parliament last year, indicated that at last there was some progress. But having spoken to Hakto, the Howick Community Tourist Organization, there's still nothing. Committees, of which there are about 3 or 4, have not come up with anything, and there are no signs on the entry. And I just find it frustrating that we ask year after year after year, and all these inter-coordinating committees meet, the people that are supposed to be there tender their apologies, they postpone it, but at the click of a finger, another project, you know, somebody's favorite child, gets sorted out, it's in the report, there's a sign, it's all done. And the man that was probably the most famous person in the world in the last 20 years and the savior of this country, embraced by an entire nation as that, we still don't have a sign for his place where he was captured. So over 55 million rand has already been spent on the Nelson Mandela Museum, and the Nelson Mandela portrait is made out of vertical steel structures, as you know, Chair. And the costs are projected to go to over 100 million rand. And yet we don't have a sign. So I do get a bit frustrated when we have these kind of reports by rote where we're simply reporting on things that are in the grid as being part of the department's objectives, but the issues we raise, which we believe as a committee are important, don't get reported on. And then we see other things that are less important be done at lightning speed, but we can't actually ever get to grips with probably the single most important man that's ever lived in our country and his legacy, and the tourism spin-offs from advertising one of the most famous places in his life, which is part of the internal tour that they've put together. So I'd like some kind of feedback on that, and I really would like somebody to tell me today it's going to happen within the next 6 months. That would be nice. It would actually make a lot of people very happy, and a lot of people would then benefit from learning about what Madiba actually contributed to this nation and the life lessons that help us and will help us become a better country, because the museum is a very nice museum, but no one knows it's there because there's no signage.
before I go, I come to you, Honorable Adams. DG, I hope today the group or yourself is going to respond on the extent of absenteeism and the extent of dropout and the loss.
Right.
That one would really like you to give us a fill of it, and also the issue of signage when you respond.
Thank you, Chair, and you covered me a bit, but I'll come to that question anyway. Chairperson, over the three quarters there has been a backlog. Can the department give us their consent that the order targets will be met by the end of this financial year, quarter four? I'd like to begin on slide 77, where the program for tourist contribution to the ocean economy. 200 learners were recruited and selected for the Blue Flag program in 50 South African beaches. Now, there was a launch on the 7th of October 2016, and KZN and Eastern Cape were mentioned here, and then two towns. Now, whereabouts in KZN and Eastern Cape was this program launched in 77? And Jefferson, can they give us can they tell us what the impact of this training was, and will the training proceed in the new financial year? Jefferson, I'm an ex-teacher, and I want to write on my colleague's question, and that is about the number of youth that were enrolled for the hospitality service training program. As you asked the question already, this FTism and the dropouts. We learn from our great Savior that you must look for the lost penny. What happened to these young people? What was the reason that they dropped out? And do you have any contact with them? I know it's your service provider, but you as the institution should also have oversight on what the service provider is doing, and if we get a value for our money. We as the Department of Tourism. Now, Chairperson, it's interesting for me, this incubator program. We saw it in the Northwest, and the department intends to launch another one. But don't you think it will be fair if they have targeted all 9 provinces to do this, in line with the fact that the program in the Northwest is very successful? And I think they should really consider it for the new financial year, to look at all provinces, especially at the provinces such as the Northern Cape, Northwest and Eastern Cape, that are Limpopo, that are really rural provinces, to familiarize that concept in that provinces. Jefferson, the other one is on, I've spoken to the incubator, the 100 rural enterprises. Are they still enterprises? What sort of support do you give to them? And can you give us a breakdown whereabouts the, not now, but you can reply in writing, where about these enterprises are, and you are you still engaged with them? Do you work, there are rural enterprises, do you work in line with the provinces and the municipalities? Because, Chairperson, you know, we have these IDPs in the local local municipalities, and this is an excellent way that from national we can engage both municipalities, all the municipalities in these 100 rural enterprises to work with the community. Then, Chairperson, on slide 57. The presenter said, with regard to the ATC, the accreditation of travel companies, the presenter said that they would look at the possibility of African countries. Now, which African countries do you see as the most favorable that you can introduce this ATC program? And Chairperson, when planning in with regard to slide 18, sometimes the department say there isn't, or the stakeholders isn't involved enough, or the stakeholder, due to stakeholder involvement. When planning, Chairperson, the department has a relative low number of stakeholders, because it's stakeholders in the tourism industry. When planning, does the department take into cognizance that there can be a delay, especially if the if there is a focused engagement with certain stakeholders? You know, some everywhere they say due to unavailability of stakeholders, and I don't see that as a reason that they can forfeit. Because you must engage, there must be a continuous engagement with the necessary stakeholders. And then the very last one, Chairperson, they mentioned two ICTSP, the Information Communication Technology Strategy Plan. They mentioned two. And they, in quarter three, they mentioned under the preliminary data, they mentioned quite a few of them. When, the last one, to develop a tourism spatial information framework once the requirements and specifications are established, when will that be? And Chairperson, somewhere in the presentation they say that something will be done in the fourth quarter. I can't find it now. I can't find it now, but as we are today, on the 10th of March, and the fourth quarter is due. I want to know whether that was established. I'll try to find it, Jefferson, and can, if you can give me a chance afterwards, I'll try to indicate them where it is. Thank you, Jefferson.
Page 59,
on
our page 59.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Even though it is an ambush, but it's fine. Chair, let me also welcome the presentation of the department. One, Chair, as I was going through the report at my own time, from time to time, whenever we make our own declaration regarding tourism, and if you have noticed, commonly we're always sticking to one major concern, which I did not find expression of, the issue of the grading system of the accommodation businesses that we have in South Africa. They are still very skewed in favor of your previously advantaged people. And you don't find a benchmarking target here. Because I'm saying it because our view is that accommodation is central in the agenda of transformation. And at some point, we must agree that we have to put a serious target, and not just a target, but also supporting mechanism to ensure that we achieve it. Because the reality is that you still find very few black accommodation establishments that are graded, which therefore are able to attract international guests and national guests. And it remains a bone of contention to us. We understand, of course, it could be linked to ownership patterns and all those things. But we need to see an effort and a submission in terms of what becomes an obstruction and a challenge in terms of achieving that particular target. But the point I'm raising is that there is nothing that seems that there is an effort put in place to ensure that we accelerate a transformation in as far as the grading system of the accommodation, in particular in townships and in rural areas. Because if we talk about transformation in the main, we're accelerating those people. The second other part is the issue of the township and rural economy. You see, if one is to make an impact in terms of making a presentation in Parliament, without even giving a long presentation, but at least I must be able to identify with it in terms of the tangible, touchable targets that the department says, this is what we want to achieve in the... I was impressed, obviously, last time you were here when you indicated your Mzolis and all those places and all, which is good. You see, I appreciated that. But from time to time, we need to have a target that talks directly to the rural economy and the township economy. Because that's what our people are listening to. You see, and it must be a feature that always they're obviously indicating an incremental improving presentation that this is what the department is putting its effort to ensure. Because the reality is that if you're not going to speak about the township economy and the rural economy, you are going to speak up for the economy that is already established. And those people will obviously say that there's nothing new. There's nothing new because we're already established. So I'm saying that at least when you see a quarterly report, it must give an expression in terms of what the tourism department is doing in the township and rural areas. We have raised the issue of the ocean economy. I think also Ms. Adam has also raised it. Ms. Adams has also raised it. But I'm interested to see the, because I understand tourism cut across sectors, but I'm interested to see a facilitative role played by tourism to ensure that our own people from rural areas and from townships are able to participate in it. Because I am convinced that ocean economy remains an integral part of tourism. But the challenge is that, given the wedding, very sophisticated and big, so our own people in the township and rural areas, they don't see what role they could play in the ocean economy from a tourism perspective. And I believe that it becomes a duty of yourself to facilitate that. So the last point I want to make, you'll answer if you can. We have heard also that in Northwest, the provincial department wants to erect a statue of Mr. Zuma. And obviously, you guys are experts. What attraction do you think is going to make, or detraction, do you think is going to assist South Africa? Because obviously, you don't want to do something that is going to be have a negative implications and effect to the tourism work that you are doing. We want things that are going to attract investors in South Africa. We don't want things that are going to detract them. So we expect you to expressively make your point and say that we think that this statute must be parked for now. Yes, no, no. The point I'm making
no.
is that
the wrong department.
Chair,
but
as I'm making my point,
as you're
asking
about the statue, as a blending, you might as well ask. Which statues are directed?
Chair,
this one you're talking about is for us and us.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the DG.
But see, I'm lending.
We're waiting for the DG because
you
told us that some issues are already up. The question
you must
ask is, what issues are already up, DG?
No,
right.
Chair.
From the tourism
point of view,
where
you will ask that question yourself. Let
but,
me ask my question. Culture remains an integral part of tourism. So you can't separate culture from tourism. And I'm making a point, like I've said initially, they will choose if they want to answer or not. And I'm asking, from a tourism perspective, do you think the erection of statue of Mr. Zuma is going to attract tourists, international and national? Because I'm from Eastern Cape, I'm not attracted to go to Northwest even now. Thank you.
You ask other questions, Didi, but you also tell us the statues that are already at a park. You have it everything there. Monument, and you will tell us the statues that have already been erected. That are attracting for us. I'm sure Honorable Khala has his best responded to by the art and culture. There. You'll get more joy there. Okay. Honorable Khala.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Four questions. First one is on your programs. Program one on capacity building with local government. Now, we know that there's a conference coming soon where we are trying to capacitate local government.
One, two, and three.
Sorry?
One, two, and three.
Oh, yes. Okay. So I just want to find out what programs does the department do to work... That's good. Okay. But I want to find out from the department, what capacity building programs do you do as part of that specific program, I think it's knowledge, if I'm not mistaken, to work with local government in terms of product development and destination marketing, etc. Secondly, the Director General mentions that the Grading Council might undergo some changes in terms of the legislation. Now, he mentioned it, but obviously we will deal with it at a later stage. But I'm very keen to find out exactly what does that mean, because we've been speaking about the workings of the Grading Council for some time. And yes, indeed, the Grading Council has an important role to play in terms of bringing more people into the space of tourism, specifically those places of accommodation that previously never had the opportunity to be graded, can now apply for funding through the TIP budget to be graded and be part of the benefits that they will receive, etc. So I think the Grading Council should not be a place where people collect stars for having the luxuries but it should actually be a system to transform the tourism space by creating more places graded to be able to be part of the benefits that that they would then qualify for. So I want to find out exactly what did you mean by changes in the legislation affecting the grading council. Then the last two questions, 3 and 4, relates to the budget. You mentioned that there's membership paid towards external organizations. United Nations World Travel Organization is one of the examples you mentioned. What are the benefits for us being part of those organizations? I'm just curious to find out, because that's a substantial amount. So what are the benefits for us being members of those type of organizations? And then the last question relating to the budget. At two different intervals, you mentioned that there's rental towards office accommodation, and then at the later stage, you also mentioned under a different line item for buildings. If you can just clarify, because again, those are substantial amounts. So I just want to find out what are we doing in terms of our budget to streamline it towards accommodation, office accommodation for the department itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think international tourism spoke about reshuffling the languages. Instead of starting with Russian, you started with Mandarin. What was the rationale behind that one? So that we all have to understand. I think you, in fact, I'm not thinking, there's a lot of, we did workshops. Can you just tell us the impact of those workshops so that we understand that if you pay so much for a workshop, what has been the impact of the workshop? And of course, we'll talk about the status, DG. You spoke about the high numbers of tourists this quarter, in the past quarter, up to 18% from international. Like, which countries that were responsible for bringing in more tourists, if you can share with us, including those in the continent? We would really appreciate that. And then, seeing that Mandarin has been put forward and brought up, will China think of accepting SAA flights because they reverted to their own flights? Now that they're being put high up on the agenda, can they put South Africa high up on the agenda as well? Yeah. In fact, the department has got one fault line of delays in getting service providers, in getting procurement, in getting this and that. What causes delays? Because they seem to be the in thing. But what you are giving us now, it seems like you have reconfigured your department. Can you share with us if there's any reconfiguration or if there is an intention for a reconfiguration? Because it looks like there's been a lot of reshuffling, reshaping, so that at least we are in the clear. Thank you very much, DG, and your team. Can you respond? But it looks like those targets that you haven't reached, you might reach quite a lot of them from what you have presented. But start with the signing, because I saw there was a lot of KZN. Not because I'm from there, but because my colleague in the committee has asked about it, and it has long been in the waiting, including Isimangalis.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. Honourable Chairperson, I would be honest and say that I will opt not to respond, as the option was also provided. So I will take the option not to respond to the question from Honorable Howell. I, however, would like to say that ours is to promote the country, to sell what the country offers. So the statues that we have developed or contributed to the development, it's a big present, and previously we made an open invitation to the members to visit the site. So I would like to still extend that invitation, that in future when the committee is in Gauteng or members are in Gauteng in their own personal capacity, it's a site worth visiting. Now, it includes, the statues include pre-colonial times. So you would have the statues of most of the kings of that time. You would have statues of the colonial times and some of the kings that played some roles within that. You would have the statues of the period, the anti-apartheid period, and so on. And you would have elements of people that were in support as such. So you would have, and it's not politicians only. It's not politicians only. So you would have a statue of Miriam Makeba. You would have a statue of Julius Nyerere. You would have a statue of Alan Paton. You would have statues there of essentially you would really have the entire history of almost Southern Africa right there. So it's really and we know the missions in the country, like the American mission, for instance, they would always take their visitors to that site. They would take their visitors to that site, they would take their visitors to Northern Ireland. There are instances where you would get a phone call on a weekend and they say, we would like to do this thing, but we actually are in a bit of a fix because we didn't make the preparations in time. What do we do? So those are some of the things. These heritage products are in demand. When you speak to Chinese tourists, they make statements like, we haven't put enough statues to actually depict the heritage of the country. And they insist also to say, which links to the rural tourism question, they insist to say, yes, we've seen all these things that you are showing us, but just take us to that authentic South African normal life. We want to see that, and so on and so forth. so all these issues we are really paying attention to. Honorable Chairperson, I will attempt to start with some of these questions. I'll bring the colleagues, but there are some questions that I think I must respond to before they get to the details of the question. The China, the value of the language training, to start with, just the value. I think DJ Malan is going to talk to the other aspect. The value of this is that there are certain markets that are very sensitive to the extent to which they want to feel welcome. China is one of those. Now, when you take tourist guides from Robben Island and they go through this Chinese training and they're able to actually tell the whole story of Robben Island in Mandarin, it goes a long way, a very long way. And we've got the support of our counterparts on the Chinese side. And indeed, in China, government has got quite a lot of role in terms of the places where they feel are sufficiently friendly for their nationals to visit. And they would not hesitate to actually put a ban on this or that if they feel it is not the case. So this is about making sure that we put in place everything that is necessary for a market that is growing exponentially. So we want to be able to get a bit of a lead in this market, that in the future, when everybody is actually looking at China, we are already there and we've got our foot in there. So those are some of the issues we're looking into. SAA flight, we do have rights to fly there. But what SAA had said, this public matter, public record, was it was not quite profitable at the time to be running this single flight going there and then. So, I don't know whether they will reconsider in future. The numbers are looking good. It's one of the countries abroad that has actually shown quite significant growth from 2015 to 2016. So these are some of the issues that certainly we've got to look into and say how best do we deal with it. A reconfiguration, yes, indeed, we are in the midst of a restructuring. Informed by the fact that we tabled a new strategy in the previous year. So that strategy necessitated a shift in terms of how we organize ourselves. We'll come back with this information. At this point in time, the internal processes have been concluded. I can say that the top structure is not sensitive to share in the sense that it's what appears in the EME, and the EME is already in the budget speech. So that we can say. And that top structure focuses on the still policy and knowledge services, and obviously it's policy, knowledge services, and international. And then there's corporate affairs, the CFO. Then there's two totally new programs. One focuses on visitor, what do you call it as well? Visitor? Services and a second visitor? Services and enterprise development. And then you've got destination development as the last program. So, but we'll provide more detail where they fit, what they do, the various purposes and so on and so forth. I think this is going to be properly discussed when we come to discuss the APP in a lot more detail. But we believe that it's going to assist us to actually focus on the tangibles of the work itself and also be able to do a lot more things that we were not necessarily able to do in the manner in which we had organized ourselves. We are functioning currently in a manner that amongst the top management allows for a smooth transition. So if there are issues that are currently residing in policy and knowledge services that DDG Chetia is responsible for, and they are actually going to be going to the visitor services, there already is a relay race of sorts to make sure that transition is smooth, 1st of April, all of them. So if I was to say, Didi Chetia must now give you a detailed brief about SRI as an example, she would give you a total brief right here without actually having to go back to the office. If I was to say that DDG Murunga should give you details about what is going to happen about transformation, which is not currently her space of responsibility, she will give you full details without going back to the office. DDG Malan would give you all the issues that are happening within the policy space without going back to the office. So we are trying to make sure that that harmonization takes place earlier. And then when we get into the implementation, then we are fully ready for that implementation. Honorable Force did not give the option not to respond to this grading council question, but
can I come to your rescue?
Thank you.
Can we wait for Gradient Council to come so that the question will be direct to it? I'm sure it will be coming with SAT next week. It will be coming with South African Tourism next week. Can you park your questions for the Grading Council to actually respond?
But Madam Chair, I'm taking a cue from the department because they are part of SAT and SAT works in terms of a service level agreement from the department side. So what is the department's intention with the Grading Council? It's difficult for me to ask them because they just take the instructions from the service level agreement.
Honourable Chairperson, what I was trying to avoid, for lack of better words, is to jump the gun. Because Honourable Force is asking me a policy question.
This is the legislation.
It is the legislation. Now, the minister is essentially the only sponsor to cabinet of the legislation. And upon cabinet acceptance of that, then it would follow the normal process to come here. So I can sit here and say, this will change, that will change, that will change, and then ultimately cabinet says, no, this thing should not change. So it's those types of issues. And in terms of the operational issues, the Grading Council will come here, Honorable Chairperson, but what we can say is that we have synchronized the accessibility to the grading, what's the word, incentive, to the grading incentive, so that we do it through the Grading Council. As one is applying to be graded, they are also automatically applying for the incentive as well. But there are other things that we will also, we are tabling the strat plan today, there are other things that we are also looking into with the Grading Council in terms of how we can grow these numbers, and that will be presented as well when we come with the strat plan, with the APP. International organizations, I'm going to use an example. If we don't pay our subscriptions, certainly, we risk to lose our right to participate in both multilateral as well as some of these regional bodies. So these bodies would be developing protocols, and they would proceed and would not necessarily be party to that. Honourable members would recall that previously we reported that we were part of the restructuring or the transformation of RITOSA. That whole process, which we played quite a role, we would not have had any role to play had it not been that we are part of that broader family. So we've got to be part of the family first, and it comes at some price. But some of these things, some of the bodies that we participate in, we are able to then influence the agenda in terms of the program of work. And that reduces a burden on us to actually go and duplicate some of the things on the site. DDG Malan can tell you about some of the most recent events that they've had with the counterparts in the continent and hosted very good dialogues and so on and so forth. And the leadership role that South Africa is playing in that particular space, by and large, is actually beginning to show that there is value in terms of what we are putting into this space. Signage, I'm going to give it to DDG Rampil. We can't make that promise. We can't make that promise. The reason why is because the type of signage we are talking about and the type of signage that Honorable Groenberg is talking about is not the same. We're talking about interpretive. And we have got responsibility around that. The type of finance that Honorable Kumbuk is talking about is governed by statutes from the Department of Transport. And they are quite specific about where and what. And that makes it difficult to actually make a promise before Parliament that this is going to happen in this particular manner. So it's really, she's got more detail. I think she's going to talk about those details. But in the main, it really is a very, very difficult process. And then it relates to a whole host of issues. So they would have safety imperatives, the extent to which one can be distracted, and so on and so forth, the types of signs that can be put on the national roads or on the provincial roads or on the region, all that type of stuff. So it's a, and they've got a whole manual that deals with that, regulated and what and so. So it's really, and this is why, Honourable Kumbuk, we do take that side as a very important side, very, very important side. And it's part of what we were saying about the heritage tourism that is growing. We recognize that. We are doing some work now with Sazon Valley in terms of the mid-modern. There's a lot of resentment that is going to be taking place there. So what we can, we will. And we always make that commitment. What we can do, we will definitely do. Some things we would like to do, but we are not able to do because of some of these constraints that we're talking about. The observation, Honorable Adams, the observation about the incubators. In absentia, I would like to thank her for commending the work that the colleagues have done in the Northwest. But the first incubators, which we said we're going to put, we said we're going to do this as a pilot. And we're asking ourselves a fundamental question that says, even if we were to have one per province, it will not be sufficient. Because some provinces are quite vast. Now, like Northern Cape. Now, is this the model that we are going to use throughout? And that question we are sincerely asking ourselves. So you will see when we bring the strategy, we are saying we need to look at other mechanisms going forward that would still allow us to have a much wider footprint, but not necessarily confining ourselves to one mechanism that might reach a particular area, be very effective in that area, but then what do we do going forward? So we will, that's work that we will be looking into in more detail. Then I think Azumrungwa will deal with the dropouts, the blue flag, but maybe I should just highlight something about the blue flag. The blue flag in the main is about the quality of experience at the beach. It includes an environmental dimension which will deal with water quality, the upkeep of the site and so on, the waste issues and all those types of issues. And then on the other side also the safety issues that relate to the people that are bathing there and whether the lifeguard issues are attended to and all those kinds of things. So all these types of training then look into some of these issues that I'm talking about, and it just gives some level of assurance that you are in a space that you should be able to enjoy yourself. That's really the idea behind it. In the continent, the issue of accredited travel companies. Preliminary feedback that we got is that some of the operators, upon being granted the opportunity to facilitate for application of the visas for their clients, see that as an opportunity to top up on the package. So they then charge the fee, and the fee then just balloons this whole package, which distorts the actual value for money proposition that we give. So there's a need for us to actually reach out to some of these operators through FAT and ourselves to demonstrate the value of actually getting much bigger market share that you support, as opposed to getting a few and charging them so much money, and you probably would not even reach those levels in terms of revenue that you're trying to actually get to. So that's something that we still have to do quite a lot of work. This is part of what was in the back of my mind when I was saying the ATC thing might not necessarily be one of those targets we'll reach this year. So there's work that we still have to do. It is taking place. They are busy with it. And I think Madam Alan can give a whole lot more information with regards to that. Before I hand over to the colleagues, the issue about complaints. The powers that we've got so far is to be able to resist the complaint. So we'll then look at the statistical issues. But one of the things that we have noted, and I think the committee has also noted, is that we have not created sufficient awareness about the existence of the mechanism. I think that's one thing that we would admit on our part. So there's still more work that needs to be done to raise awareness about the fact that there's a mechanism where people can actually bring their complaints if they are related to tourism. We are also informed by industry, because industry does have most of them, particularly the ones that are corporate, that have corporate formation. They have their own complaints and complementarities mechanisms. So you stay at a place, when you leave, they will send you something and say, how was your stay? And then you can rate them. They will also give you an opportunity to say, what are your complaints? And then you can then put your complaints into that. So there are a lot that get resolved just at the operations level, immediately after the person has actually lodged a complaint and so on and so forth. I have had those personally as a consumer. But the ones that we get normally would be either a person is leaving or a person is not necessarily intending to lodge it there, then try to lodge it with us, which would explain this lesser and lesser numbers. But if more and more of those that are actually coming to industry directly are resolved, that is good. Now, we have had this chat before about customer satisfaction surveys and whether we should go that route. And so the experiences are in different places and so on. But I think as we go, you will see some of the things that will be featuring in the press. And I'm restraining myself because Minister is still going to do the budget vote. There will be issues that start talking to these kinds of different approaches to how we deal with information. Let me stop there, Honorable Chairperson, and give him the colleagues the opportunity to provide clarification on the matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start first with the signage. Yes, we did agree that we'll really look into the signage going to the capture site. We're able to engage the Umgeni municipality, the Department of Transport in the province, as well as the provincial department. in KZN. We processed two applications, if I may use that word. One for R103 and the other one for N3. Approval was given for R103 and for N3, which is Sunrail, it was declined based on the manual that we referred to, which is the South African Road Science Manual, Chapter 9, simply because they felt that it doesn't comply. The nearest numbered route where this signage will be put, it will be R103. And we said we'll take part of the funds from the interpretation signage that we're going to put there to look into this, to the sign, even though it's not our responsibility because that is a directional signage. Because of the delay in terms of the letter coming from the management company, we haven't yet released the money, but the letter has been received. So once we start with the interpretation signage, we'll also look into making sure that R103 has a sign showing that the Hulk site is that way. On the blue flag type, yes. On the blue flag, as DJ said, we want to have that quality experience for our tourists, assuring them of a clean, safe, and healthy facility. The training is on environmental issues, water quality, occupational health safety matters. They were also trained on digital media, including live guarding. As I indicated, we targeted 200 and we had 180, which also brings out the issue of why do we have this dropout within our training program. The dropouts are quite a pity because really a space of someone who really needs to be trained on that particular training program are quite key. Unfortunately, the dropouts, the young people, in terms of the working conditions within the hospitality, the long hours in particular, is what makes them to really not stand the heat in the kitchen, if I may say that. The other issue, especially for our young females, issues of on pregnancies is another thing that comes up to drop out. The other reason is finding permanent work or some of them going to school to further their training. We'll be able to provide the breakdown in terms of all our programs in terms of this the dropping out. But on absenteeism, because if you haven't come to work, in terms of the EPW principle, you are not going to get the stipend for that day or for the number of days that you have absented yourself. On the incubators, DJ has already indicated our future plans. Yes, it would be good that you have these incubators across the country, and as well as bringing on board the private sector to really carry on this. The interventions that are done in the enterprises or SMMEs is on finance, service excellence, business planning, social media, pricing and legalities, as well as compliance, marketing issues, and training on how to access the market, as well as mentorship and coaching. The 100 rural SMMEs, which now is 75, because the 25, that they are okay, they don't need further, will also provide the breakdown in terms of where, as well as what type of training they are being given. There was an issue on focused engagement. Do we have focused engagement with our stakeholders? We do. In some instances, even if there's a letter that you want from them, you write it yourself so that they are able just to provide the signature. But sometimes
go on, and it's tough, our process, in terms of implementing our process. I think that's as far as I can go.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, members. I think DG touched on some of the questions. On the ATC, yes, there are preliminary indication that we need to do more work. It's around what DG explained, but it's also around the business environment within these countries and also around the priorities within each country, and it also differs. Sometimes the priority is not an ATC program, but implementation of the current existing regulations. So we are looking into that, and for sure in due course we will make a decision on how we will roll out in Africa on the ATC program. The membership subscription, Honourable Foss is not here, but DG also spoke about that. I think it's very important for us to be part of influencing the program internationally, but also in the region and in the continent, and working together with our counterparts. And membership fee make us part of that family. In the UNWTO, South Africa also serves on the Executive Council at the moment. And we are also part of the Statistics Committee, which gives us the opportunity to influence and engage on the development. DG spoke about the rationale behind the Mandarin and the Russian. Honourable Chair, just to highlight that although we did add the Mandarin training for this current financial year, it did not affect the Russian training negatively. It's just that we continued with the Russian one, it's just we moved the Mandarin forward because of the reasons explained. Honourable Chair, you asked about the countries, the international tourist arrivals. I do have the list, but just to say, in Africa, Zimbabwe, Lesotho, and Mozambique remain our top three markets, source markets. It hasn't changed from the previous year. And internationally, the UK, USA, and Germany remains our top three markets. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond on the office accommodation, in our Program 1 administration, we've got a separate sub-program which deals with office accommodation. Our budget for the office accommodation is 29.268 million, and our spending up to today is 22.7 million rand. Our office of accommodation is a lease agreement that we've got, Public Works lease a building on our behalf, and then they invoice the department. So the lease agreement is between Public Works and the landowner.
And then just two small minor additions from my side. I think with regards to the oceans economy work and how we see product and destination development, it's not just about enhancing the activities that happen along the coastline, but it's about building routes that extend all the way from one end of the country to the other, working with product developments along those routes to enhance that experience. And particularly in terms of facilitating rural economies and township economies. It's about linking the experiences that are township experiences with actually what happens along the coastline. So if you go to any one of the coastal towns, it is correct that you can experience the beauty of the coast by being on the beach. But you can also expand your tourism experience by having a experience of a township along with that. So visiting Cape Town is an example. You will, of course, do the beautiful drive along Chapman's Peak. But you can also go into Khayelitsha and experience the beautiful 360-degree view from the center that's been built. So in terms of the oceans economy work, our role is, of course, facilitative, and it is about bringing into that experience much more than just being along the beach. And it's about expanding that experience so that the benefits of tourism through our route development, our product development work, and the experience development work are actually taking you beyond just being along the coastline, but experiencing a whole variety of different product offerings and different experiences. So to answer your question, Honourable Member, it is about actually expanding the experience, and it's not just about what happens along the coastline. The second addition is around the local government training. So that training, I think I have mentioned previously, is NQF rated. It is about working with local government officials to deal with questions of destination development, and in particular how those are integrated with the IDPs and how those find expression within that. I think in addition to the training that we do in terms of capacity building, we also work quite closely with provinces and local authority municipalities where we have agreement on joint projects that we're implementing. So in some instances, we provide technical support, we provide assistance, as DDG Rampela has said, with funding applications. We also provide assistance where we are trying to unblock restrictions. So even though those projects might sit within provinces and within local authorities, where we are able to facilitate unblocking of obstacles, where we are able to facilitate conversations with national government and with funding agencies, we do play that facilitative role, as well as providing support to our colleagues in those provinces. Although we are not specifically running research on customer satisfaction, Honourable Member Krumbok, at our visitor centres at the airports, we actually do have customer surveys that are completed. So roughly, as I said earlier on, we deal with about 1,200 queries at each of those visitor information centres per annum, which translates to about 400 that are dealt with. And many of those do relate to missing connecting flights, challenges, etc. Those are recorded because those visitors who come to the centre actually do fill out visitor satisfaction surveys. So it's not a formalized program, but for the information centers themselves, those are recorded information. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Chair, that will be all from us. Suffice to say that we have taken note of what I would consider as suggestions. But I would then say let's see whether some of these things are adequately captured when we deal with the APB.
Yeah, it's just a two-fingered shade. Obviously, I'm really disappointed to hear about the outcome from SANRAL, but I have to say I did take a lot of encouragement from what the Minister said in the budget speech last year, and I'm wondering why this whole thing is now all SANRAL's responsibility when our minister specifically referred to it in the sense that it was going to be an interdepartmental, interministerial effort. So the one thing I can promise you, I'm not giving up on this. I don't think the decision is right. It's not like you're traveling in America where you have billboards advertising new dancing. They have that. And that is a distraction. Or even a chain of restaurants called Hooters, which is a distraction. This is the Nelson Mandela capture site. And my memory is, I'm going to just make sure my memory isn't playing tricks with me, but when I arrive in my constituency tomorrow, I'm driving 10 kilometers north of the place where I believe the sign should be. And if I'm correct, and I stand to be corrected, there is a sign on the N3, very large, saying Boshuk Golf Course. It's a private golf course. And if SANRAL can allow an advert, essentially, for a private golf course on the N3, it passes my understanding how they can't have a signpost for a non-profit organization, which is the Nelson Mandela Capture Site and Museum, where it is of national importance. But I'm going to just double check, and I will take photographs, and I can assure you if there are such signs within close proximity to that Howick North Tweedy turnoff, which is where it is, then I will be presenting this to committee, and I will be raising this with SANROC. Because it can't be right that we can advertise something of less importance but not something for a man as important as Nelson Mandela was. So it's not over, and I think we need to engage further on this issue until we are absolutely sure that there is no possible other decision.
I concur with you. I concur because there are things of no value that we see on our roads. You want to go to Kamhlanga Hospital, but you will be seeing a lot of signage on the road going to Kamhlanga. So's tavern, this tavern, this tavern. And you drive a long distance before you can go, you can get to the right destination. I think you are right. And I think when the minister comes around next time, if I don't raise it, please just tell me, Chairperson, you said you'd raise it. That there should be a serious talk between the ministers, the Minister of Transport, the Minister of Science and Technology, the Minister of Arts and Culture, and SANRAL, because if when you are driving up N1 or N2 or N3 or N whatever, you see that Google to that side, this side, and at times some of the things that you say, oh gosh, what's this about? So that is a national monument, even if it's provincial. Exactly, where people are going to be wasting their money. SANRAL is naughty, and I think it's important that the ministers address it now with SANRAL. It's very, very important. Not only for South Africa, but for the world. So it is important to do that. But DG, before you go, I've always seen on the media and whatever that, what house is that now? Mandela's house? Vilakazi Street is going to be a tourist, whatever, precinct. Do you have an idea what role is tourism going to be playing? Or is it the province of Gauteng that will be responsible for that? Thank you.
Again, we will talk about this a lot when we come to the APP discussion. Suffice to say that our first initiative on that side, which is already underway, is a safety initiative, which will not just the street itself, but it goes beyond the street, so attractions in and around that particular area. But there will be more discussions, subsequent discussions, and it will be a partnership. So all spheres of government will be involved in the process.
And I hope that will also address Honorable Temenkosi Kgaola's concern around township tourism and rural tourism. Thank you. Thank you very much, DG, and your team. You are excused. Can the committee have a very short meeting on its own, but thank you very much for the presentation, and we hope you're going to follow up on the things that you've told us. But you told us that some of the things you cannot go into detail because they are in the threat plan. But we are looking forward to you executing the various programs to the fullest at the end. And CFO, end of the last quarter. If there are any environments, tell us the environments. If there were shifts, tell us what shifts were they, how much biomass were done, so that we are able to follow the band. Thank you very much. Honorable members, hello, honorable members, hello. We are not going to do anything with adoption of the minutes because we had the formal quorum. So we are not going to do anything. Unless that could be done on Wednesday. But I would ask somebody to stand for me because I'll be in the chair's meeting on Wednesday. But I'm sure we might have a quorum. You heard?
I'm not available.
Okay. Maybe we'll see which Wednesday we'll have space. Because we cannot promise next Friday because we'll be grilling SAT like we're doing now. And maybe there's a lot to want to get from SAT. But honorable members, we are going to have an oversight visit, which Jerry is going to take us through. But what the instructions that came from the chair of chairs is, if members go, they must actually go for the full duration of the oversight. Otherwise, any saying, no, I must go, then you are responsible for paying for that must go and for the accommodation that was reserved for the individual. But thank you very much. Jerry, can you take us through the oversight visit?
Sir, there isn't much on our side except to say, honourable members, we have, as the chair has indicated, our request to Free State has been approved. Now, what we have done, we have developed a draft itinerary that we have sent out to the province so that they can look at it as to the what is our idea about this oversight. So we've put this in your package, honourable members. So we would like members to look into that. Once we receive a feedback from the province, from Free State, then we can also do some engagement as a committee exactly as to what is it that they are proposing. Because what is in front of you now is the proposals from our side as to exactly how do we want this oversight to unfold. The reason why we do it this way, honourable members, is because in most of the time, when we go to these provinces and say develop a program for us, we find a situation where you will be taken only to the best projects and so on, and then coming back impressed only to find out there's a lot that we haven't seen in the province, which is not going right. So we've put down some ideas, and then we sent the program to them so that as a province they can look into what we are proposing, and then they come back to us. Then I'm sure in the next committee meeting, and then we will have an idea exactly as to how do we proceed with it. Thanks, Chair. Chair, also in your package, members, I've also tabled the invitation, formal invitation that we have received from the Minister of Tourism, is inviting the committee to attend the local government tourism in Indaba, which will be on the 3rd and 4th of April. We have been invited already. The committee has made an indication that they do want to attend that conference. So what we have done, because we were a little bit skeptical that if we submit all these things at the same time, they may not all be approved. So what we have decided, we thought that let's submit the oversight one first, and then they approved, and then we submit this one of the local government plus the tourism in Daba, in Durban. Once we got some clear dates on the program of Parliament, then we will process all of those issues. But as of now, the oversight is approved, then the chair will sign the local government tourism endeavor for us so that it can also be submitted as well. It will be at Empress Palace in Gauteng on the 3rd and the 4th. Because it starts in the morning, we would suggest to members so that our traveling be on a Sunday, so that we overnight there, and then we get everything as early in the morning as the proceeding will unfold. Those are the issues from our side. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members. So that is it. The ball is in your court, and we'll take it from there. Otherwise,
all members of the committee. Honourable Kumba, is your situation still the same as you have indicated the 29th?
Yes, unfortunately.
29th March?
Yeah, unfortunately, Chairperson, there's a series of IC by-elections on the 29th, which is slap bang in the middle of that week. So I think the last time I went and Honourable Foss was unavailable, and I think we're going to swap this time because of that. Don't trust someone else. You're also from our province. Are they going to drag you off to Ward 32 to help there on the day? Are you going on over such trip? Yeah.
There's no problem.
Okay.
I'm sure Honourable Foss will even be happier to go there again.
Thank you very much. Which other committee are you in?
Oh, I'm just